Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops. Today on Open Loops, we have Yan Gray, sometimes known in the community as Mr. Gray. I'm not sure if you've been seeing this person's work out there. Well, he's a man. It doesn't necessarily mean that Mr. Gray is always dealing with people or things that we could describe as humanoids, as he is an ET experiencer, host and producer of the YouTube channel Experiencer Interviews. And this isn't just, you know, some I don't know, your average waste management worker. No offense to those people out there. But this is a guy with two college degrees. I mean, you, Mr. Gray, Yan, you've done a lot here, and you're studying a lot of very interesting fields. So for you to come forward and say, hey, I'm having these out-of-worldly experiences, and I'm going to put myself out there as somebody that interviews other people that are direct experiencers of extraterrestrial and UFO UAP phenomenon, says something. We're going to get into all of that. I'm excited to learn about your experiences and also what you've surmised, having talked to so many people. Yan Gray, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely. Absolutely. I what intrigued me, and this is really what did it in. I mean, look, obviously anybody that goes by a pseudonym in this kind of field is sort of like, oh gosh, is he hiding something? Though actually, I will ask you that. Do you feel, I mean, you told me your name is Yan Gray. Now obviously that's an allusion. I assume Gray is an allusion to the Grays you encountered. But what is your relationship, Yan, to being a public figure? Do you need to disguise yourself? Are you afraid of something or people getting on to you? Where are you at with that?
Well, Greg, I thought it wise. In the beginning, I used to use my first name, I used to live in a small town, and the more I started like putting myself out there, I realized that I was putting myself at risk, in a sense that when you're part of society and you're sort of part of a culture, and sometimes you work for big companies, and eventually the more I started sharing, I made the error of sharing with one of my employers a few years ago. And because I was speaking to one of the big bosses who was with us at a company supper. So I thought like this was okay. But my first, like my real employer, when he heard that, he told me to shut up and to never talk about this again. So I really took that seriously, because I really loved with whom I, you know, the people I was working with, and I, you know, the money was good. So, you really have to be careful when you start talking about ETs, because to some, it's a normal thing, but to many, still now, even though we've, you know, in the U.S., they've been talking a lot about ETs recently on TV and certain medias. A lot of people, it freaks them out. Their reality bubble tends to bust quite easily, and their comfort zones sort of being attacked. So I took it upon myself to sort of change my name, since I, you know, I'm more out there with my YouTube channel interviewing a lot of people around the world. So it's just to protect myself and to protect those around me too.
Oh man, Yan, you know, if someone was at a corporate function and started talking to me about any bit 5% of what we talk about on this show and or your show, I would be so grateful, man. Like, come on. I applaud you for at least putting it out there. I've definitely been in that position myself where it's you don't want to be necessarily pigeonholed, but at the same time, this is a real thing. I'm even going, I was going through your YouTube channel before, and you do a very nice job of putting the faces of everybody who is an experiencer out there. And just look at all these people. So many people all over the world have this thing, and again, I guess I come from the John Mack school of thought, which is I can't just dismiss it. I can't say that all these people are delusional. There's a psychosis here. It's just imagination. I mean, there's so many stories. Let me ask you this. Were you, before you had your experience, your first experience, and I do want to know about that, did you come from a skeptical mindset? Did you think this would even be possible? I mean, what was your sense of reality, and then what happened after?
Well, let's just say that everything started off for me at the age of 3. So again, I was born in 1975, so I'm 48 right now. And so I grew up in Northern Ontario, Canada. So in a small town by what we call Tomogamy Lake. So yeah, Tomogamy, Ontario. And in the 70s, we didn't talk about ETs really. We didn't have cable. We lived outside of town. My dad used to work for a logging company. And so like our TV was black and white when we had these, these old like bunny antennas that we used to, get the, a few channels. So other than the tabloids, we didn't have much anything regarding ET, but when it came to the supernatural, now there's a lot of ghost stories in my family. So we were sort of used to like the fantastic, the supernatural. So when I started having my own stuff, I didn't know it was ETs at first, not until I met my first abductee, which eventually became my fiance, which she opened me to the world of ETs, because she was a great abductee from England. And so there's a huge story around that. So we'll get into it. But yeah, I didn't grow up knowing about ETs, but I fell into it like most of us do.
Interesting. Yeah, man, that's do you have to when you talk to people, or you're like, no, I didn't abduct her. She was the first person I met that was abducted. I was sitting there going, oh my god, you're abductee, dude, what? I'm sure well, you probably don't talk about this that much. That's probably not the lead-in story when you talk about how you met your wife, or is it? I don't even know.
Well, there's a huge story around that. You could almost do like a movie.
I think you should.
I won't talk about the production company that contacted us, but they wanted to do a documentary on our life, really, how we met. And but we actually a medium prophesied that we'd be meeting up, and what she described to the T. And we met at Walmart's of all places. And as soon as I saw her, I thought like, oh my God, she's an angel. And like a British, like slim British, long blonde hair. And the voice that came out of her was angelic. And I fell in love the moment I saw her. And so long story short, like she contacts me like a few days later, and she said by email, and she says, I'm a starseed. And I thought like, what the hell's that? and she start describing this, the world of ETs, and that she's an abductee, gray abductee. She gets into, she talks about her own experiences as a kid. And I thought, oh my God, this woman's an occult. So that's how little I knew, other than, you know, what the Inquirer would tell us about ETs. I knew nothing. And the more she got into it, the more everything made sense. And that's when I started contacting all the dots of the experiences I had before meeting up with her.
Whoa, man. Okay, this is very interesting. So wait, I'm going to get into this more. So you, let's take a step back and talk about you at age 3. Do you remember what happened? I mean, I know that a lot of people, it's hard to even remember what some of the things that happened at age 3, though I imagine this must have been somewhat of a different experience than what most of us had. I mean, take us through the first incident.
Well, when I say the age of 3 is, I'm 4 years older than my brother. So we're 2 so I'm 4 years older than him, and he wasn't born yet. And this happened at least a year before he came to be. So I'd say 3, 2.5. So I still had a crib at the time, and eventually I had my own bed. But in that bedroom, I remember telling my mom that there were people in my bedroom at night. And I did this for like the entire year and a half. And I was so afraid. My mom would say like, okay, you're afraid of the dark, blah, blah, blah. But I was so afraid of the dark, knowing that there were people there behind me, that I would sleep with my entire body, right tucked against the wall. Or sometimes I would sleep in a fetal position. And I did that up until the age of 11. And that's how afraid I was. And but like being close to the wall, I felt protected. And if anything happened to me, my back would take the brunt of the impact. So imagine me being freaked out, telling my mom there were people looking at me. And I don't remember the faces. I know, I just felt it. They were there. And but sometimes my mom would wake up at night realizing I was right beside her, watching her sleep. Now, how the hell did I jump from like, you know, the cots, or they'd have these bars. So somehow I was able to jump over the bars and go see my mother. But speaking to a MUFON researcher, they say that sometimes when kids are being brought back, when they're being taken, sometimes they go see their parents sleep, and that gives them, they feel more secure. So growing up, I didn't know that this could have been ET related. I just thought, okay, well, I'm afraid of the dark. I was afraid of the windows, the closet, under the bed, the whole shebang. I even remember my first nightmare. Because you know, the grays, when they show up to you, especially as a kid, they try to use something that you're not afraid of. So when you hear about many stories about grays showing up as clowns, let's say, because you know, a clown is something that's funny, that's not fearful. But if you're afraid of clowns, especially as a kid, it could be because of the ETs. Now, one time I woke up, and so my brother was born, but I was still young, and in front of my bed, at the end of the bed, I see a 3-foot-tall boxing glove. So I know it's a nightmare, but again, grays use what we call screen images. So they show up, they project themselves into your mind as something else, less fearful. But I still remember that from the get-go, that's going to stay with me my entire life. So that's the thing that happened to me as a kid. But I didn't put that off as perhaps ET related, not until I met with my contact TF friend. But so I had a normal childhood up until I finished school. So when you're in school, you're not in a position to think. But as soon as I finished my second college degree, I was on my own for the first time. That's when the psychic abilities started to kick in.
Interesting. So were you harboring this memory of all these things happening at the same time, or did the psychic abilities wake you back up to, oh, I had these experiences? I mean, I'm always curious about how people evolve when it comes to experiencing, you know, the anomalous phenomena like this. And, you know, it must have been a lot. I guess, let me ask you this. Like, was it a lot to carry with you all these years?
Well, no, because, you know, these things happen to some of us very gradually. So we have these experiences that happen to us every now and then, but it's not like traumatic. For some, it is. Some of it, it's like full hardcore abduction. And sometimes a lot of them, I have got personal friends that had medical stuff happen to them on board UFOs. So it's very real. And especially as a kid, if they do something to you medically, especially as a boy or even a girl, these things are real. But to me, it wasn't traumatic. It's just that the experience I had would change. They would evolve, and they wouldn't happen like every day or so. Like maybe every few months, every few years. So it really gives us time to sort of relax and just absorb it. Really, just to get into the like my next the psychic stuff. So this is the first time this happened in my first apartment in 2002. I was living in Quebec City and I was working at a mining research center. And all of a sudden I was looking at, I was just about to fall asleep. And I was looking at my bedroom closet and the air in front of the closet, maybe 2 feet from my face, starts to bubble. Or imagine heat rising from hot pavement. And what I see in that sort of haziness or energy was my brother's face. His head was tilted to the side. His eyes were closed, and I had the impression he was drowning. So I felt a bit panicked. This was my first time seeing this. And I called my mother up, and I told her the story. The same week, she calls back, and she tells me that my brother was at the hospital getting massive blood transfusions because the medication, he was taking methotrexate. It's sort of like a small chemo pill that they give to you to bring down your immune system, and that was actually killing him. His blood platelets were severely low, and he almost died because of it. He's in karate and he's physically well. They were after like a week of getting a lot of liters of blood, he was able to bring the platelets up. But that vision was to tell me that something's going to happen with my brother. So a lot of the psychic stuff is really related to something bad or good that's going to happen to someone within my family.
So, okay. And this is where, I mean, are you, I guess to kind of circle back on my initial question, do you have support for this, Yan? I mean, is this just you having to figure out the world, or were you talking to, you know, your mom or anybody that could have? I mean, how do you cope with all these experiences?
Yeah, that's a good question. I tend to ask that to everyone I do interview, and I had my mother growing up to be my go-to person, I say. She was into a lot of angel stuff, so she read a lot of books about angels. Well, I grew up Catholic, so we used to go to church, but we weren't that like super into religion, but like my grandparents were. But you know, we would go to church and everything was good. So I wasn't really freaked out about it because, like I said prior, we had a lot of ghost stories growing up. But my mom would say, keep this to yourself. And for some reason, I thought everybody was having these experiences. So that to me, this was just normal. Eventually, I found out it wasn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really thanks to her. I would like each Christmas when I started buying her books on ETs and Pleiadians and whatnot and angels. And she was really into it. And I found out that she was into crystals and pendulums, which I started working with pendulums eventually. So, yeah, it's really thanks to her that I was able to have somebody to talk to.
Yeah, I'm glad you got that support. That seems like it would be very helpful in a reality-shattering experience like that, or several experiences. Now, do you buy into the idea at all that, and I've been seeing more and more of this, that angels are beings like this? Have you explored that idea in your head, or because I know people talk about that what we understand as religion may actually just be twisting extraterrestrial existence into something more palatable. As wild as angels are, I mean, that's not the most palatable in the world, but it's our attempt to humanize this kind of thing.
Well, you're quite right. It's a bit of both, really. Because when you see grays or other ETs, they can either project themselves to you as something like benevolent, either to trick you or not. So, you know, the experiences, they're good and they're bad for some. So that's, I don't try to push the all good, all holy type of stuff, but to many, to all the, like, I've interviewed almost 100 people so far, and I've spoken to a lot of people down the road, and most experiences are benevolent. They're good. It depends on how you see it, but I know, like, Chris Bledsoe, he's got this Lady of White story, Lady in White, and so he really pushes the benevolent side of stories. But to some, they had like reptilian stuff happen to them, and you know, some were bad. But to say that all ETs are angels, no, they're quite physical. Some are energetic. They live on different, in a sort of different reality. I can't really get into that much, but there are angelics, that I'm quite sure.
So wait a minute. I definitely do want you to get into that, but you don't have to yet. Wait, when you say you can't get into it, does that mean, is it too complex to get into, or you're just not, you don't want to disclose that fully to the public? We couldn't handle it. Like what?
Yeah.
What is...
Yeah. The latter is more, cause I've had people on, and, the more I know it, because it gets into the whole aspect of religion, of Earth's actual history.
Oh, yeah.
That would be really too complicated right now. And it changes how you view things. And yeah, I'd rather not get into that.
Then, hey, it's totally fine.
I'll get it. Just to explain a bit, my grandmother's bloodline. So this, when I said that I, you know, the experiencer that she, you know, the great experiencer, she became my fiance. When I told her my grandmother's bloodline, and now I try to, there's always a reason why you tend to have these experiences, right? Sometimes you've got a military background. So somebody in your family is working closely with military, or as a public servant, let's say for Skunk Works, or a civilian company that works with the military. Now my growing up, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, knew that her family was important, but we didn't know what it meant. So we thought it was, she could have been like from an Irish family that was important back in the day, but we didn't know much until I told my fiance when she was you know, back in the UK at the time. And my grandmother's surname is Aylwin, Aylwin. And when I told my fiance, and she says, oh, that's an important family. The family name appear in Britain's earliest public record. It's called the Domesday Book, or Doomsday in certain, I think it's, you can pronounce it. And it contains the results of a huge survey of land and land holding commissioned by William the First in 1085. So like that family name goes back at least 1085. And what I found out through her is they were actually nobles. So my grandmother, and thanks to her, like I'm sort of related to British nobles. The manor's still up. I think it's called Aylwington. The name slightly changed over time. So they were lords and they held seats in that manor. But when you look at the family, it branched out from a very old bloodline that goes back to like to the Roman era. And when you look at Anglo-Saxon translation to that, it actually means elf friend, noble friend, magic friend. And also when you look at the word A-E-L-F in wine, the word wine means friend, but A-E-L-F in elf wine, in Anglo-Saxon, it means the shining ones. Now the shining ones, they're related to what people call the Nephilim, the Elohim, and the old gods of Sumeria. So when you look at that, that's why I don't like talking to about angelics and stuff like that, because a lot of the old gods could be portrayed as angelics, and That's why it gets really complicated. So I just wanted to get out to put that information out there, because a lot of the bloodlines today, they've got ET stuff related to them.
Yes, yes. Well, look, I mean, it does get very complicated for sure. And one thing I wanted to say about that I think is, super interesting is the fact that you have interviewed people on your show that I believe aren't, I mean, they do have experiences, but I certainly know, for example, Penny, right? Penny Bradley, who I've had on this show too, has a very, in addition to being, you know, one of the top secret space people and authorities in the field, I mean, she has very clear views that she expresses about what's good, who's actually in charge, who might not be, the history of the world, all this stuff, that I am sure contradicts things that other experiencers have told you. You know, one of the key things, I mean, we can get more into that, and I'm sure we will, but let me just clear up kind of a basic one right now, since it's your name. The Greys. I've heard that people get it wrong, that the Greys are actually good guys. I've heard people say that the Greys are with the government. They're on the craft that the government has, and some kind of, you know. And then I've heard that they're just the bad ones. Don't get involved with the Greys. You don't want to. I mean, I don't know. There's so many different inputs and so many different people expressing opinions in this field, and I, you know, like kind of like the mainstream topics in the world, you know, we're not going to get anywhere further with all these, you know, different information coming in left and right. And now we're dealing with an esoteric field like this, where, you know, you're even trying to get public buy into it, but people can't agree what's what. So I'm concerned. No, I'm not. I am concerned about that, for the sake of like legitimizing ET experience and whatnot. When there's so many different pages and such, I'm curious your thoughts on that. A, and then the follow up to that is going to be, who are the Greys?
Well, I can't say that I had an actual like one on one conversation with a Grey, other than what might have been like a Grey face appear to me and hover above my bed. We could get into later, but those that I trust and I know personally, I'm good friends with Susie Hansen. She's a contactee researcher from New Zealand, and she's like an aunt to me. Really, I respect the lady a lot. Really good friend, and she would share with me and her book. She talks about her life with the Greys. And again, she was being taken and she was being trained and by the Greys, and everything was benevolent. And Judy Carroll, again, from Australia. So a lot of the stories that I've heard from people personally, and that, you know, the stories with that they've, the experience that they had, that they lived through, were all good. The only thing that when it comes to the Greys is like the automatons, which for some, some of them might be the ones that do the actual abducting. They could be seen as bad, but I know it's mostly benevolent. Now, sometimes the fear factor might kick in because how the way they move, they tend to like wobble a bit. They walk like penguins. And they glide also. So they got this technology where they come up to you and they glide. And really the lack of, you don't feel emotion from them, but they do have a sense of humor. They're totally different than humans. When you see a human, you could gauge if, you know, that person's lying. And you get a feeling of the energy of a person. So sometimes I'd meet people and I would get them, like they become friends really easily. And sometimes, you know, you feel their energy and just don't want to be friends with them. But when it comes to the Greys, you don't really feel that. But sometimes when I had an experience where when I was sleeping and I had this Grey I had problems with my, I had gallbladder attacks a few years ago, and I'd call out to them, and while I was sleeping, I'd see the face of an old gray in front of me, and like imagine going to a dance and the strobe lights would flash, and you'd see these, you know, the faces of people, and then, you know, the strobe, the flash would stop, and then everything would be dark, and then you'd see the face again. So I would see the face of a gray like that, and I felt the energy from the gray was female, so I knew her gender without actually knowing what it was. So it's when it comes to grays, it's really complicated because it's out of this world. It's not something that we're used to, and it's not something that we could compare with. I know people that would see a UFO and would, I think there was a story once when that I heard that this child was looking at a UFO, and then the father says, "That's not a UFO, that's a restaurant." Now, why would a restaurant be flying in the air? So this is how our mind works. It's so complicated to talk about the phenomena, because we're not used to seeing or experiencing the phenomena itself.
So wait a minute. This is, you're telling, for the record, you are not saying that the grays are bad. In your personal experience, you don't think they're harmful.
No. One time I had, after doing, you know, starting the show, I had this, there's always a case where you, especially when you're sleeping and something happens to you, you wake up the next morning and you're going to put it off as a dream, right? Which, you know, it makes sense really. But this time I was sleeping and, I'm with my brother and I'm looking towards the sky. Now, this is far from being like all my super hot encounters that we haven't had the chance to get into, but I'm with my brother this time, and I'm looking towards the sky and pointing to this black thing coming towards me. And you realize it's like a sort of two upside down pyramids fused into one. And that looks like a three-sided star or whatever. A bit like, well, I'll get into that. So you see this sort of two three-sided star coming towards me, and it's black. And then it morphs into a gray right in front of me. And the gray says to me that I personally had an important mission. And I would never say this because I'm not like ego driven or whatever. But the gray said that I had an important mission. And as soon as I said that, it disappears. And two humans appear right in front of me, right like that. Two humans like dressed in civilian clothing, but they look governmental. And they start to say, "What did the gray say? What did the gray say? What did the gray say?" Now, the government has humans that can contact you, really. I can't say telepathically, but they can, like, remote view. So, you know, these humans would say, they were debriefing me all the time. And I say to them, well, the only thing that Grace said was, I had an important mission. And that's it. And they were pissed. And they get up and they leave. And that's when I wake up. So I Google the next day, like, three-sided pyramid. What I saw in my vision was actually true. The thing is, this pyramid, these two-sided pyramids, like fuse into one, it's what we call a Merkaba. And the Merkaba is the vessel used by the soul to move about. So the gray was able to energetically transform into this Merkaba, and that's how it was able to travel towards me and contact me. That's why it morphed into its sort of gray shape. And contacted until I don't know how the humans were able to get a hold of that, but that's what happened. And the fact that that's something I never saw before, the two-sided pyramid, and to actually Google it the next day and to really realize that it's a transport vehicle, it's really mind-blowing.
So wait, this was all in your dream?
Exactly. And when I Googled something that I only saw in my dream, turned out to be true.
Interesting. So and the implication there is that the grays send these messages in your dream?
That's right.
Huh. Well, there are other things I've heard too, right? That they, for instance, there's a lot of stories of coming in the window and numbing your body, time freezing, that kind of thing. You ever experienced that?
Oh yeah. Now I was so this was in 2013, December. So I was with my fiance at the time. She was she stayed with me for a year. And now we had a lot of stuff happen in that house. That was my first house. I bought it. It's a modular home. And that house we would get, it wasn't haunted per se, but as soon as I came to that house, I started staging the house. And I would say to those that passed, you know, my family that used to, that died, you're allowed to come into the house as long as you protect the house. So from that moment on, my trash bin would open and close at night, maybe 12:30. And I would start to get body taps at night to just to wake me up, like two taps here and there, sometimes twice during the night, just to wake up. I would have my fiance at the time would see ghosts. Sometimes just before falling asleep, I would hear children laugh right beside my head. Now, this experience in December, we were sleeping, of course. It was cold. So I would tend to wake up a lot because of the cold, to go to the bathroom. And so this time my bed was right beside the bedroom doorway. And there, you know, the curtains were closed in the bedroom, but in the living room, which was right beside the bedroom, the curtains were up, and you know, the moonlight would come in, and the light from the, you know, the lampposts. So there was some light coming into the bedroom. So I wake up, and having the bedroom doorway right beside my face, I see this 5-inch sort of oval shaped black hole floating in the bedroom doorway. Now my brain registered in the beginning as it was sort of matte gray-ish, more to the black, and nothing was holding it in place. It was about 5.5 inches by 3.5 inches wide, and it was 2D. There wasn't any width to it. Now, as soon as my brain registered all of that, I realized there's something in the bedroom doorway, and I jump and I turn the light switch on. It disappears. Then my fiance wakes up in a jolt and saying, now you have to remember, she's a gray abductee. Also, I'm not sure I'm going to say this, but let's say her great grandfather was a knight and was a brigadier in the British Army. And he was the best friends with people in the military, like very, very high ranking people in the American military at the time. So that's, I'll leave it at that. And so she wakes up in a jolt saying, what's happening? And I tell her the story about the portal. At first I thought it was like a black disc, but eventually I found out it's a portal. But so I tell her the story, and she says, no, I'm not getting up because of that. Somebody was telling her, a man was telling her in her mind, EMP, saying the word electromagnetic pulse nonstop. Like something was happening at the same time as a black hole. So we knew, like, either we were being attacked or something funny is going to happen. So after like a half an hour, we fall back asleep. So I'm still facing away from my fiance. I'm facing towards the entrance where the portal was. And I get the feeling there's movement coming in through the bedroom, a doorway, but I black out. This time I wake up and I'm facing my fiance, towards the center of the bed. And I'm super drugged. Like, you know, the paralyzing effect. I'm super drugged, like waking from anesthesia. And what I'm seeing in front of the bed and on her side of the bed were at least 5-6 foot tall shadow beings, very huge, broad shouldered. So imagine like a football player and seeing only the silhouette, but it's standing up, and very broad shoulders. And where the neck would be was a huge, disproportionately, but very huge round helmet. And they were all identical. And we're moving in front of the bed, on her side of the bed. And with some effort, I'm able to raise a hand to say hi. Because, you know, being into ETs now, I wasn't really afraid of anything. And as soon as I say hi, I black out. Now this time, so I wake up eventually, consciously, and I'm looking downwards. And I'm realizing I'm barefoot, that I'm probably naked, and I'm wearing hospital robes. And then I black out. And I wake up the next morning.
What? Now, for people that you know are going, oh man, this guy's got wild dreams. I mean, what do you say? What do you say to the skeptics?
Yeah, well, the day that you've got these own experiences happen to you, that and you've met a lot of people that had them, and you've got paranormal stuff happen to you, and then you've got I've had like spying on my phones when I was dating the abductee. That yeah, and the fact, you know, the coincidence that telepathically, because you know the girl's a like a medium. Like we'll get into, we've got time to other stories. We've got mind-blowing stuff happening. But when you've got all of that, you say, okay, well, something happened for real. Because you can't have this coincidence of her being saying by a man telepathically EMP, me waking up consciously seeing, this wasn't asleep. I was awake. I saw the black hole. And when I woke up again, I was awake as I was looking into the bedroom. Now I was seeing everything. So imagine looking to the, so you're sleeping, you wake up. You're looking about in the bedroom. It's dark, but the shadow beings were darker than the night itself. And I saw through them because I saw my bedroom closets. I had two of them, one for me and one for my fiance. And they were 6 feet tall. Well, when I say the closet about 6 feet tall because I'm 6 foot tall. And so that's how I was able to gauge their height. And when I used to talk about this on other radio shows and. I had people that had MyLab on, which is a military abduction, and they think that the shadow beings could have been a form of military abduction. So the fact that I woke up consciously with hospital robes on could have been like a contributing factor. But again, these stories, these experiences must, yeah, they have to happen to you, and you have to meet a lot of people to sort of sometimes connect the dots, because I've had other stuff that I didn't connect the dot until later on.
Is there stuff still out there that you're going, yeah, no one's talked about this thing yet?
No, pretty much most of my stuff happened from all the good stuff really started in 2005. And when I started going public, that's when it started to die down really. Which is, you know, a bit normal. I've heard that before. So was I being manipulated to do what I'm doing right now? I think so. One experience was back in 2012. Everybody thought, you know, the end of the world. And so I started. This is I met my fiance at in 2012, and then we got together in, you know, the year after. But we. Because of her, I started meditating, and I would send out energy to the planet, you know, positive thoughts and stuff like that. And so I go to bed, and as soon as I close my eyes after like a month of meditating, I see on my left eyelid. So imagine your eyes are closed, but there's like your eyes projecting onto your left eyelid, a black and white box. In that box, I was seeing the side view of an old typewriter. Now this could have been like a sort of download telepathic, okay? Because I didn't know anything about, you know, telepathy or downloads or whatever. I'm just saying this is what happened. This is what I saw. So I'm seeing this black and white box and the side view of an old typewriter with the old cylinders that you had to push left and right when you were finished a line. So I saw somebody typing on that. So the impression I had from that was that I had to blog my stories, because my fiance at the time used to write down her stories and help people with their own experiences. So the day after, I logged on to her website that she would blog, and I started writing down my own stuff, really, just to get it out there. And so that same night after, so like the day after, I started meditating again. And I wasn't expecting anything. I just go to bed, and instead of seeing on my left eyelid a black and white box, in the box I would see two hands shaking on it. So what I got from that was like whatever sending me that idea of blogging my story, they were saying congratulations, that's what we wanted you to do, and they were like, that's why two hands were shaking on it. So because of that experience, I've been doing this ever since. I mean, you know, I've started speaking in U.S. conferences, on radio shows, and I started doing my own channel really to get the some stories out, because there's a reading stories and UFO groups out there, there's a lot of people with a lot of contact, genuine contact, that don't have a voice. So I want it to be that voice. I don't want researchers on. I don't want the fame. I just want to do things professionally and get and to respect and to honor those that come on. Because I've had people that said no because they wanted to share on podcasts because they didn't want to put their face out there. And I totally understand that. So kudos to all those that, you know, the brave men and women that do come on and put their, you know, their face out there, because it takes a lot, really. And it's so, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, believe me, I wish I had some kind of experience like this that could be an excuse for why I'm doing what I do, but instead I'm just desperate for attention and selfish. So that's at least you've got some psychic messages there telling you to do what you're doing. I don't know what's good, unless you have some insight into the Grays. The Grays haven't told you about this this guy in Brooklyn doing the Open Loops podcast for any reason, have they?
No, sorry, no.
Oh, great. Oh, well, okay, well, I'll suffer silently or loudly for all your listening pleasure, I suppose. No, that's fine. But this is, you know, hey, I do find that kind of an interesting phenomenon. I have wondered about that. I've never really made the connection between people going public and if this stuff does die down. I mean, it seems like a very simple observation, but you know, if I were to look back on my interviews, and I'm sure you can do that, going over the people you've spoken with, is that a general trend? Is there anybody? I mean, I definitely have some people that, not in the realm of UFOs, but you know, I'm thinking of this woman Stephanie Bingham, who is very much talking to every day she has, you know, ghosts, ghouls, goblins, fairies, shadow people living with her in her house, and it's still very active. I mean, would you say that there is anybody that you're like, oh no, this person gets abducted all the time and they still do? Or is there a general trend for it to die down? What have you picked up from all the people you've spoken with?
Well, when it comes to certain experiencers, I think there's waves, maybe for some, like every 7 years, you've got this sort of peak of activity and then it drops down. Because, you know, the ETs, they do have their own agenda. They got other stuff. And I don't like experiencers or like people out there that love to show, you know, put their face out there. And some of them do love the sound of their voice. I hate saying that, but I just don't trust them. I'd rather trust the people that are shy about talking about their experiences. They're more introverts, and those that don't want fame. So I don't know, when it comes to people that put their face out there, if they're always out there, there always has to be something fresh, right? To try to bring people in. And that's when I I step back and I say to myself, well, is this true or not? Like, you know, skepticism, it's a healthy thing. So I don't,
Are there people on your show you've been skeptical of? Like, you go back and you can pick out two interviews. You go, yeah, I interviewed this person, but I don't buy it.
Not because I do. You have to trust them, really. That because I want people to trust me when it comes to my own stuff, and I don't have all the answers, really. But if I want people to trust me, I have to also trust them. So that's the main footing that I start from. Now, when it comes to all of everyone's experiences, I wasn't there. So, and I can't say that I'm the most knowledgeable when it comes to everything, because no one's like truly knowledgeable. We have to be we're not in the ETs, their boots. So to say that someone knows everything, I don't think that's totally true, but we have bits and pieces. So thanks to everyone, everyone shares those pieces. Well, this is how it's important that, like, your show, my show, as soon as you start talking about stuff. One time I had this lady in the early beginning when I started talking, she came up to me and she said, well, what you described is exactly what I saw. And in the beginning, I didn't know they were grays, but they looked what we call Wanginas. And when you look at what's a Wangina, it's like an Australian spirit. When you look at the actual drawings that they found on rocks, well, it's clearly like a gray, because you got the big head, you got the big eyes. So thanks to, you know, the more we put these stories out there, the more other people are going to connect the dots. Now, to say that everyone's experience is true, I can't say that. I'd never say that, because I wasn't there. even stories when it comes to SSP, you know, the secret space program and the, you know, the, you know, the, what's happening in space, that, like, come on, you know, to me, it's a bit like far-fetched, but again,
that's even harder to comprehend. It's so extreme, these cases.
Yeah. So, you know, the fact that I didn't live through that, I can't really, that's why I don't have a lot of SSP on my channel. I got more ET stuff happening. So when it comes to SSP, I just try to step back because I'm far from being like super knowledgeable, but it's possible, because remember, not a few years ago, these, you know, the Space Force just popped up out of nowhere, and just looking at the, you know, all the funds funneled to black projects, they had to do it illegally, and now all of a sudden they've got a Space Force that they could legally funnel money to. So you look at all the SSP stories coming out. Well, there could be something true to everything, really.
Yeah, but I am kind of curious, because now, and by the way, we will link to this in the show notes, Experiencer interviews on YouTube, tons of content there for you to absorb. Do you think there are any telltale signs? And your opinion, Mr. Gray, what do you think constitutes a more credible experience story versus one that isn't?
Well, I like to say that seeing is believing. So if the person is able to write down everything, you tend to forget a lot of stuff. So thanks, I've got this PowerPoint, so I tend to add stuff. So if somebody's able to blog or write down everything that happened to them, and like do it scientifically with images, videos, testimonies with the people, because, you know, sometimes when stuff happens to you, it happens to those surrounding you. So if you got testimonies, if you do things scientifically, and you could like produce like a timeline of everything on how everything's like happened, well, you're more credible that to somebody that said, oh, well, this happened to me, I saw a moving star. And your experience doesn't really constitute something heavy if it only saw a moving star. But if I saw a star and I blacked out, so like, sometimes people have missing time just by seeing a UFO and they wake up in their bed, but the person was outside. So if you got these sort of otherworldly stuff happen to you, and you could, you know, write everything down and bring this to the public, then it constitutes more that something that's more credible than something that's made that wasn't really produced in an orderly format. So at least, you know, that's a good start, at least for me to be convinced that person should come on my show.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So, yeah, being able to document everything. I know I remember I did have somebody on my show that, and I want to ask about the hybrid situation as well, because gray and hybrids go together. But this woman was talking very much about the hybrid stuff. And then I spoke to someone after who also was listening in, had her own experiences, and said, I don't buy this guest that you had on, because she was speaking in the present tense when she told her story, not the past tense. And I went, oh my gosh, is it as simple as that? I mean, I don't know if you've picked up on little things like that, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, there are telltale signs when it comes to a lot of the people I had on. They had what we call phantom pregnancies. They would go to the doctors, have the blood work scans, and you'd see the baby, and they would have this extraordinary thing happen to them during the night, and they'd wake up the next morning and the baby was gone. Sometimes they think that the baby might have even fell into the toilet while they're going to the bathroom, like the fetus. But I've heard stories that the Greys might have even got the fetus the moment it was going to fall out. So you got these signs that, with, you know, scientifically, that they had scans, the baby was there, and the day after it disappeared. And sometimes they would have, the doctor would question when they do these gynecology, How would you say that?
Gynecological.
That's right.
I guess. I don't know why I'm an expert in pronouncing that, but yes.
So the doctor would, you know, do their own thing, their own exam. And then they would realize that there would be a lot of tissue or scar tissue inside the woman. And they would say that, did you have a lot of like abortions or like a lot of kids? And some of them, no. So you've got these like scientific proof that something happened to them, to their fetus, to the female body parts that shouldn't happen in a normal situation. And then it gets into the thing that, you know, the ladies themselves might be brought on ships, and then they're being shown a few years later their actual child. So I had a lot of people, I've had men on also that would, as a kid, would be taken and had their sperm taken. And like a few years later, they would show them, well, not a few years, but as an adult, like maybe 10 years, they would be introduced to their hybrid daughter. Again, to some, I it's totally understandable. It's a bit out there. But again, if you have the opportunity to speak with the individual themselves and to know them, I've had a lady that had a gray appear on her, like photos of a gray appear on her telephone, which the after like disappeared like maybe a few months after on their own. But, you know, these things do happen, and you really have to know them. And as soon as you know them, then you totally, you understand, okay, well, there's definitely something to their story because they seem, you know, credible people.
What do you think, in your opinion, from your experiences, is the most credible piece of evidence? Is it the markings? I mean, do you have a photo of a time where you were one place and then you woke up and you were in gowns or something like that? I mean, what do you, if someone were to, you know, put the gun up to you and said, hey, Mr. Gray, what is it? You have three things you can point to that you have to convince us that these unexplainable things happened. What would be the three?
Well, number one, if I had, I wouldn't talk about it because I know that, you know, my phone was tapped for a year during the time we were together. So I know how it's important to shut up when you do have evidence. I don't care about who says what, and not you do shut up because I've had people that were threatened by the military, so I know how bad it is. Secondly, personally, when it comes to proof, well, it's just a proof that I saw. I had two UFOs fly over my house. Now, I'm not talking about in the air, like super far away. The second night, my fiance was home. We did a C5, and I had a UFO fly maybe like 30, 40 feet just above the power lines, 10 feet wide, or what I called an orange orb ship or orange lollipop. And it made no sound, and it just glided. And for some reason, everybody was outside because this happened in August of 2013, and nobody saw it. The children, my neighbor's kids were out. Nobody saw it, but it did a slow flyby, soundless. I could have thrown a rock at it and touch it. That's how close it was. And the whole thing lasted a minute. Nobody saw it because they can control who sees it. Secondly, I thought that craft might have came for my fiance at the time. So a week later, I'm at my parents' house in the woods by the lake. I do a CE5, which is human-initiated contact, for those that don't know what it means. But I did a CE5 on my own, so I try to contact them telepathically or with my voice. And I did that for about an hour. I go inside to see my folks and just to, you know, have a chat for 5 minutes. As soon as I step outside, as soon as I step off the front porch, I get the feeling to look up. As soon as I look up, that same UFO just comes over, flies over my head. The timing was impeccable. You know, that's how good they are. And it just appeared, and it flew. And I had the feeling to, as if I had to go and get my folks. So I run inside the house, get my parents' house, my parents out. So my mom is into ETs and stuff like that. So she came out a lot quicker. My dad more down to earth a few moments later. But my mom saw the craft. When it flew a bit further away, my dad saw the craft when it was farther away. And from that moment on, my dad started having his own experiences.
Whoa, that's pretty. So if we talk to your dad, that's kind of a that sounds like it sticks out. I mean, was he skeptical of this stuff before, or?
Well, of course, he didn't believe me.
And then
But
he had
now he does.
experiences. Wow.
My dad had a 4-inch, a few months later, my dad had a 4-inch golden orb. My dad had the flute, so he slept in the basement. As soon as he woke up during the night, again, timing is impeccable. This 4-inch golden orb flew through the bedroom window and flew from one side of the bed to the other. He tried to grab it because it was close to his face. He couldn't. Then it flew back out right through the bedroom window. After that, he started having shadow people. He'd wake up being felt up, touched, and there was a shadow person right beside the bed. And not too long ago, now imagine in the beginning I talked about screen images, how the grays portray themselves as clowns. Now my dad didn't know this at all. He phones up, and he says, "Yeah, I woke up last night, and there was a clown in my bedroom." My dad's in his 70s. My dad doesn't—he doesn't talk bullshit.
Yeah.
There's a clown in his bedroom, and he tried to kick it, but he said, "Yeah, it felt off. It looked like a clown, but it's like they don't know how to dress properly as a clown. Like, it's 'cause they're ETs. Of course, they won't know how to like dress as a clown, but it felt off." So he knew something was off. It wasn't like normal. So it looked like a clown, but it wasn't. I had my best friend. She's like a second mom to me. Her kids would, or like her eldest when he was like 5 years old would complain, "Mom, if these fucking clowns, if I'd be happy if these fucking clowns would leave my bedroom." So, this guy's awake and he would complain about the clowns, and it's a typical screen image. And her daughter, when she was 16, would wake up at night in her bedroom with trolls playing on her bed, jumping around. Now, I'm not sure if they're grays though, but she said they were trolls, and they were so mischievous, and she was afraid. She'd close her eyes, but they would play on and jump on her body and play around, and they would try to get her eyelids to open up with their fingers. So she could see them. So they're playful also. So there's nothing bad about them. It's just that the experience is so vast that you can't really put like, "Oh, this ET race is from this place," and they're from everywhere. And they tend to live on ships, so you can't really pinpoint a galaxy and whatnot, but the experience is really vast.
Has anybody ever had the clown experience besides you?
I know a lot of people.
Really?
Oh yeah, a lot of people. And sometimes, well, I think Mike Cleveland, he would have owls. So imagine like a 3-foot owl right in front of you on the road, in the middle of the road, stopping you from moving. You won't have like a 3-foot tall.
Yeah,
So.
isn't there? There's a whole book about this, the owl UFO connection.
Yeah, that's right. I had friends that when they were being manipulated to drive somewhere. Now this happened a few years ago. So two females really, and they're friends with my girlfriend. And so they would drive, and one of them saw this huge spider in the middle of the road. So you might everybody that saw like the movie Harry Potter. There's like a huge spider in one of the second movie. So one
Yeah.
of them saw a huge spider in the middle of the road, and that freaked her out, and she had to drive somewhere else. And that other her other friend and on the let's say the passenger seat saw a huge dog in the middle of the road. See, so they're able to manipulate what you see to make you do something. So they were all brought to a place in the field. And so they get out, and there's other kids there, and they were all drawn to this place, this field, thanks to screen images. And when everybody looked up, a UFO was overhead.
I mean, that's, well, I mean, that sounds like a, it sounds like the aerial school incident, another incident of that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a bit, but again, this happened in Canada. So yeah, you know, the grids could do stuff to you. Nothing wrong, really. But again, so it depends on the individual. Some might see their car might break down right beside the, you know, on the road, and then they'd realize that there would be a deer all of a sudden looking through the window. Why would a deer all of a sudden, beside your car, look through the and see you, look at you through the window? So sometimes grays do use animals as a screen image to make you feel comfortable, and at the same time they're safe also. So, you know, this is quite common, really.
What about the footage that's out there? Do you buy any of it? I know there have been people that take images, and some say, you know, on the, I think there's an image of Skinwalker Ranch, isn't there? Someone captured a gray. I mean, do you buy any of that? Do they look like anything you've seen before? Is it all fake? I mean,
there's a lot of CGI on Facebook, so I tend to get pissed off because you don't help the community if you do put stuff out there that's false. But a lot of the triangle UFOs, they're pretty cool. And when you got UFO, I've had UFOs that did power ups. When you do speak to them, I would say like power up or blink blink, and eventually like a star that would be moving slowly would create this huge blast of energy. So if you got something like that, okay, I'd say that's true. To me, there's a lot of like bullshit out there, so I don't really look at UFOs, UFO videos. I've had a triangle. I did a CE5. I was with somebody that worked with David Jacobs and the other, like a MUFON researcher and other people. And like again, my fiance back then, we did a CE5, and we had a triangle UFO fly overhead. And the thing is, I saw the three white lights on each point of the triangle, and in the center was a huge round circle. But the thing is, UFOs, they don't make sound, but we heard afterburners. So to me, this was typically probably a TR-3B military American. But when it comes to UFO videos, to me, they're hard to capture, really. I've had people, like personal friends, that would try to capture UFOs, and the battery in their cell phone would die down. So they can manipulate technology to stop you from getting proof.
Yeah, though it's always, I guess it raises the bigger conundrum. Do you think it's there's just going to be such an oversaturation of people admitting that this we're going to tap into your psychic abilities in a way, in order to get the public on board with this? And this is really where I'm intrigued. I want to understand where we can actually make an impact here, where these stories can get the people, can actually do something. Because, you know, as you know from these trials, I mean, to even get people to speak about aliens, they don't say the word alien in Congress. Sometimes people will ask, do you believe it's other non-human intelligence? It's the latest one they've come up with. And no, we're just talking about UFOs right now. No, we're not talking about ETs. We're talking about UFOs. But, I mean, how do we actually get this into the consciousness of people that, hey, look, there is something going on, and it's something we can address? Because I don't know how to bridge the gap between my content and everybody else in the world, or your experience or interviews. Because, and don't you see it, Mr. Gray? I mean, the people come on your show, they go on the same round of paranormal podcasts, and we're all kind of insular in this community. And then once in a while, maybe one of these shows will have someone on, but they'll be lean into the, well, but we don't really think this is a real thing. This guy's a little bit out there. And I'm going, huh, yes, but there is this grassroots movement of people coming forward. So, yeah, I know that's a large question, but what chance do you think we have here to really impact greater society with these stories?
Well, the involvement, you have to go back to like the early 50s with the story with I think Valiant Thor. And so we do have these pioneers that started out and plowed our the road that eventually led to us, and we're doing the same thing. So this whole process is going to take more of the. A lot of people say, "Oh, we're going to have contact in 20 years." I don't think so. I mean, it seems like maybe 40, 50 years again, or so. But it's a bit like what Susie Hansen would call. There's like you got three like waves of volunteers. You got the first wave, second wave, third wave, and we're all doing this together, and we're helping each other out, and we're sort of laying the foundations for this next wave, and we're doing that. So it's just to show that to tell people that there's something out there, to not be afraid, because you have to consider the fact that we've been conditioned since forever by the government, by religion. So these tools, of course, religion has it's good in a way that it tried to bring what's the term? It helped us try to explain reality, give a purpose to death. But there's more to death. Since having my own experiences, I'm afraid of dying beforehand. I was, but just to get back, because your questions, the answer is really broad, but and it's very difficult to actually give you an answer, but. We had the pioneers that helped us in the beginning. We're doing our own stuff, and it's just to remove the fear factor that people have. Because when I would talk about my experiences to somebody that was a medium, though very religious, she would say that the shadow people I had were sorcerers. So there's this sort of religion that came into play to that molded her belief system. So we're trying to break down the current belief system and to show them that there's other stuff out there and to not be afraid. Because when you look at the movie Aliens, oh, there's the baddie tees or Independence Day, like, well, we're going to kill the baddie tees. They're here to conquer us. Again, it's still the government using that as a tool to manipulate the people's thinking. So this is. To me, that's the movement right now, is just to break down what people think is actually true and to let them see that there's other stuff and that people have having these otherworldly experiences since forever. That sometimes even I'm starting to think that fairies might have actually be a thing back in the day. I know it's putting it out there, but the more that you have these experiences yourself, and you have to do your own work, you have to meditate. A cousin of mine would say, "Well, how come I'm not having these experiences?" Well, I tell him, "Did you try meditating? Did you go out there and do your own CE5s? Did you show them that you actually want contact?" No? Well, that's it. So the more you read about this subject, now I'm not telling people that that they should like believe everything they read. No, I hardly read any books because I'd rather have my own experience. And try not to be diluted by other people's thinkings, but at least get it like your channel, my channel, to get information out there for those that want to be in the know, that want to learn, and that they're trying to connect the dots on their own stories. That information has to be out there. And so we're gonna help people little by little, but it's a really long process.
Yes, this is. I love that answer. I do think it is. I agree. I know I gave you a question that isn't the easiest to have a solution for, but the notion of getting rid of the fear, getting rid of the fear around it is what I pulled out of that. It's once as. Many things that have happened in society and continue to inspire new fears and whatnot. This is a topic that we just don't fully. Wait, yeah, wait. We don't fully accept, and there's a narrative around it that is very destructive. Now, that said, I mean. and I'm curious your take on this. What about the criticism of Dr. Stephen Greer, right? That this notion that they're all benevolent. I mean, that's the number one thing I saw from the community after that National Press Club hearing, is that, no, Dr. Stephen Greer, they're not all benevolent. There are bad ones out there. Be honest. Don't BS the people. I mean, you've said you've only had positive experiences with the Greys. I know people who've claimed they haven't. I don't know if that makes them less or more credible. Still exploring the depth of that. But are there, what do you think, in your experience, any malevolence? Do you buy that there is? I mean, to me, it seems a little reductive to say that everybody is. All these aliens are nice and we're just trying. They're waiting for us to get rid of the nukes before they'll show. I mean, it is very hippy-dippy in the same way that religion is about the Messiah coming back and all this stuff. I mean, it's very, to me, it's a very extreme way of operating in reality. My personal thought is, I think they're, it's not even malevolent. You know what it is? It's less about benevolent, malevolent. It's they probably have a little bit of both in them. Maybe not. I don't know. Good and evil. Good usually doesn't go without evil. It's or bad and good. We all make mistakes. We're flawed human beings. I'm sure that the benevolent ones screw up once in a while. But maybe not. What is your take?
Well, again, it's about the individual, really. So let's say you're a kid. You get abducted, you get stuck, things put up your bum, and you got this tube strapped on your man thing and having a sperm being sucked out. Now, this is really traumatic. So imagine growing up, trying to have a normal life, and you still have these experiences as a kid. So it could fuck you up really big time.
Now, they're doing this when you're a kid. Does, I don't even know scientifically, you know, is that? I'll ask, like, does that sperm actually do anything for them? Can they go that for kids? Like, it's valuable at that age?
Well, yeah, well, you have to understand that at least what I've heard is that certain Greys, you know, the race, they don't have the more you replicate, the more you clone, I guess there's a genetic breakdown eventually. So that's why they're trying to reintroduce DNA and with them, so they're trying to like make a new, like a hybrid body, let's say a hybrid ET. So that's why the whole hybrid program comes into play. So they need sperm and ovum, and that's why they just introduce a bit of their own genetics, and they're trying to build up a new race, let's say. But again, you have to understand they've been doing this since the beginning of time. When you look at just humanity. When there's a battle between, okay, their evolution and like religion, like God made the humans, but then there's the evolution showing it's like a process. But you know, again, there's like a link in between where they can't, there's like a huge gap in humanity where they can't see when it happened. So that's when I say that's when the ETs came in. They modified the Homo sapien. And they made us in their image. So that's where all the Sumerian stuff happened with Enki and Enlil, where the humans got made in their image. And again, when you hear Alex Collier, the Andromedan contactee, he says that humanity's genetic royalty, where we have a lot of DNA from different races. So that's why we got so much races on Earth. Asian, Black, here and Caucasian and whatnot. And so you have to add all of that into play that, you know, the hybrid program has been active for quite a long time and we're being changed again. Now, I can't recall. What was your question again?
Well, it was really, what was the question again? I think it is about the benevolence versus malevolence.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. But, you know, again, it's the individual. Now, did you have a soul contract with them? Because a lot of the people that do have experiences Well, they were greys or mantids in another lifetime, and they chose to incarnate on Earth at this time to bypass whatever like karmic laws there to help the humans to wake up. So that's what I've been told is happening, and one of my experiences points to that. Again, you have to connect the dots, really. I'll get into the story really quick. One time, I dreamt I was in orbit, and I was with my mother, and my father was there, but I looked at my father, and it wasn't him. But I knew, the face that was portrayed was him, but I knew it wasn't him. And we were happy. We were coming to Earth. And so I wasn't incarnated yet on this planet. And when I spoke about this to an abductee that's in the know, she said that I was in a holding place in orbit, waiting for my turn to incarnate on the planet. So that's like saying that, okay, that I could have been a starseed out there and I had to come in. I was able, I said yes to come in and incarnate in a body to help humanity wake up. So that could be like a story that contributes to that. To say that all ETs are bad, all ETs are good, I had people on that said that ETs told them personally that some ETs are good, some ETs are bad. Some do have agendas. If you look at the whole story that there's a controller race out there that's been manipulating humanity, I believe that's true. But to say that everything's benevolent just because you've got technology, I don't think that's true. But again,
what do you think about the underlying message of Stephen Greer's thing, which is that if a major sector of humanity, if we could have some kind of net positive resolution for the way humans are treating each other on Earth, then we'd be having a lot more positive experiences with extraterrestrials. Do you buy that at all?
Well, definitely. The fact that we're not killing each other, they've got their own asses to take care of, really. So they wouldn't have to use all these screen images and cloaking technologies just to hide themselves. We've got so many. I've had people that were personal friends, really, that got abducted. That the ETs told them that they had a base in Lake Superior. So they're here. It's just that why show themselves when the fact that, again, when it comes back to proof that you were talking about, well, there are certain factions in the government that don't want us to have proof, and some of my personal friends that just about the fact they're talking about technology that they saw on craft, they get shut up, they get being threatened, and they're being attacked. I won't say who, but this is real. So that's why a lot of people shut up, and it's there's the fact that they don't want to come out too quickly, is because if I had something on them that I could prove that they're there, I could be in danger, and they could be in danger as well. So there it's like a two-way system that you have to really be careful of.
Do you have a smoking gun clue? Do you have something right now that if you were to disclose it, you'd be in deep trouble? I think that's a yes.
I know. Because, you try to put yourself in my shoes.
No, I mean, look, I guess you can't answer that question.
But if I had something, what proof, well, how much of an impact would it really make? And whom of your listeners would it actually change? And what positive change would it bring about? How much of it? And would I be in danger after that? Would I lose my job? Would my family be abducted? Yeah, that's a big, if you had something, that's a big no-no.
I didn't even imagine what it would be. Like, would it be a tiger beat from the Arcturian galaxy or something? I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what you could possibly have, but it does open up a lot of questions for me.
Well, but just a quick story. Even the ETs don't try to
they would probably confiscate it, right? They'd go into the window and probably grab it.
Friend of mine who came out, who had his own book out, Steve Boucher, His entire music band, well, let's say most of the music band that he played with, he would do like bars back in the 70s, I think. And his band got abducted by the Greys. And after having that experience with the Greys on board the craft, you know, the whole exam, but they sort of used a sort of like a black and white spiral that moves, and which sort of like made him go under. But eventually when he got up and he put his clothes back on, he saw like a desk with a knob, and he was able to remove the knob and put it in his pocket to try to bring back proof, right? And as soon they were being brought back home, and then one of the Greys said, "Do you have something in your pocket? Show me." So he brings the knob out, and he says, "Can I keep it?" And the Gray said, "No, you can't." And then the other Gray said, "Well, just let him keep it. It's only a knob." I said, "No, we're not allowed." So they're not allowed for us. They do confiscate anything that we do bring back.
Interesting. If I were to hang out with you, and I especially imagine it would double the impact, especially with a fiance that has gone through these experiences, would I be able to see a UFO?
Probably. It depends on your mindset. I've had people, I did see flies in the past where nothing happened. To me, I guess the less there are, the better chances. It depends on your mindset. If you're fearful, if you're only there just to see, oh, it's cool, I'm going to see a UFO, at least in my experience, within the first 45 minutes, if nothing happens, an hour at most, if nothing happens, they're not in the area and they won't come. If something happened, it's within the hour. So if you're not if you don't meditate, so the whole Greer thing does come into play in the mindset that you're there. If you're afraid of it, if it's genuine, if you really want to meet them, something's going to happen. If you did your own homework and tried stuff on your own, stuff's going to happen. I promise you. Sometimes it takes time. Sometimes they're involved with you, so they tend to be around. If not, well, you have to make them come to you. So that's where one of the Greer's meditations or C5 tricks is that you project your thoughts out into space. So you show out there telepathically with your mind, because they can grab, they're telepathic, so they can grab whatever you're thinking. So if you show yourself where you're located in the spiral galaxy, then you zoom back into where you're located, what planet you're on in the Milky Way galaxy, let's say, and the solar system, and then you show yourself you show them the moon, and then you try to show them where you are on Earth, and then you do that in reverse. You show where you're on Earth, where you're in the solar system and the galaxy, back and forth, and that's when I had my own power-ups happen. So yeah, Dr. Greer's that type of thinking or like technique does help, but again, you have to. If you're going to be fearful and you're afraid that they're going to show up, they're going to catch it, and they won't.
Huh. Fascinating stuff, for sure. Very, very intriguing. Hey, you know what? Before we wrap, I am curious. You put up something publicly that I thought was very interesting. I think you were doing like a round of interviews, and you said that one of the shows they didn't want to talk to you because it was too controversial for some reason. What's going on, Mr. Gray? What is the controversy around your perspective and views?
Really, when was that? I can't recall.
Maybe now I'm just making stuff up for the sake of the show. No. There was some. Also, I cannot recall. It's a good way to deny something. I think you're being genuine. I think you genuinely can't recall when this happened. I feel like it was about a month ago or so. Maybe about 6 weeks ago. that I remember you seeing something and you were like, oh yeah, they're not letting me talk about the full truth, or something, it was something that you were going around saying was too taboo. I mean, has that ever happened to you at all? Even if not the specific incident, have you been too controversial in the appearances you've been on other people's programs?
No, well, I don't think so. Facebook might filter stuff that I say, but I remember one time I had a story that was so dark that I told the person after doing the show that I couldn't put it out. I felt so dark. I felt so icky inside. I felt bad, Greg. I felt really bad. And I had to, I had, I told my girlfriend, we're going out and we're going to the, I couldn't make myself dinner. I had to go out. I had to be around people and I had to raise my vibration. I had to be happy. It was so dark. So I've had people, yeah, I've had, that's one experience that I couldn't bring out to my listeners.
Wow, what made it, what aspect of it was dark? Was it the stuff happening?
It's human related. So the bad stuff is always human related. I don't fear ETs. I fear humans, Greg. I don't
You
fear
know
ETs.
what it is? Okay, now I know. I totally twisted this to make it seem what I thought was going on. But okay, here's the one of the posts that, or now I'll be honest, this is the post that I thought it was. I totally misinterpreted this. On you said at one point you were being threatened for an upcoming interview.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's up with
No.
that?
So you have, so let's say you're an experiencer, and but people around you don't want you to talk. So you got your family. So I suspect that it could be like family related problems. It wasn't like governmental or anything. It was just people around that individual wanted me to not talk about. So they would discredit the person. I've had two people on so far that well, one was clearly threatened. They did threaten me with the lawyers, but again, is it true? Was it like really a lawyer? I don't know. They could have like portrayed as one, but in the end, I had to modify one of the videos because of YouTube, because of a complaint. So it doesn't make everybody happy. So some of us out there, they do have to fight their own family when it comes to their own stories. So yeah, that's a bit sad, but it is what it is. Yeah.
What is the maybe I missed it here. What exactly is it that it's nothing you did to twist their story? It's
No,
just
I was threatened in putting out their story.
oh, but didn't they volunteer to come on or
Yeah, but their family didn't like them bringing out the story.
oh wow, that's intriguing.
So imagine growing up, we grow up as a we're molded by our family, right? By our parents. So like first half of the of our lives is basically being molded, and the second part of our life is unmolding what our parents did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we truly become who we are after we as soon as we leave the household. And but this person was a bit older, but again, not everyone's comfortable with the fact that ETs are out there. Like my brother never had experiences.
Is he uncomfortable with you talking about it, or?
No, because of my mother, we had our own like a lot of ghost stuff in the family. But he doesn't talk about it much because, yeah, I forgot to talk about this again because because of the questions. But his and that in that and one time I had this like I woke up with a face hovering over my bed, which turns out to be like a the face of a gray or a mantid. I could see through it, but it was clearly there, and I looked at it for like 30 seconds. But for some reason, I wasn't afraid at all, and I turned around and hugged my girlfriend at the time and fell asleep. And a month later, in that same apartment bedroom, I hear this female voice speak to me, maybe an inch away from my ear. So imagine somebody, you're sleeping and somebody speaks to your ear, maybe an inch away. And this female voice says, you're going to be an uncle and your parents' grandparents. I wake up in a jolt, thinking somebody's in the bedroom. So I flip the switch on the light. Nobody's in the bedroom. I look at my girlfriend at the time. She was sleeping. So I thought, oh, that's weird. Fall back asleep. And I tell my mom that next story. Again, she's my go-to person. 3 months later, again, I totally forget the story. My brother calls up and tells me, Jan, do you feel old? I thought, oh, no, that's a strange question. Well, you're going to be an uncle. And my brother got married fairly young. And he tried to get his wife pregnant for years and years, and it never kicked. In vitro, hormones, nothing worked. And all of a sudden, 3 months prior, I get this email saying that I'm going to be an uncle. 3 months later, bang, my brother calls up to tell me his wife's with child. So, but in that household, his wife's very afraid of ET talk. And I don't know why. So he's not in a mood or like in an environment which helps him to perhaps have his own experiences. But I'm fairly curious to find out what's going to happen to his one of his children.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Interesting. Okay. Now, before we go, there's still something I'm trying to comprehend here. And I just want to understand it, because it's, it's a little scary. It's not scary. It seems scary to have Grays do stuff with our genetic material for the sake of a hybridization plan. And people often, again, with the negative rap that the Grays get, it is about this alien hybrid program. There's a program going on. They take our materials, they're mixing and matching. We're part of this lab experiment. That's why the Grays get like a really bad reputation. Is that the agenda as you see? Is there an agenda as you see it? I mean, just, you know, to me, it sounds bad to do what you described, or what you described them doing to 3-year-olds, but, you know, maybe there's a bigger picture thing I'm not seeing here. What is this hybrid program, and how could we understand it so we can feel better about it?
Well, you know, the program's been going on for a while now. And again, you know, they're master geneticists. I can't say that it hasn't happened to me, so I can't say that like I'm a pro, but coming from a perspective of, you know, meeting people and hearing their stories, it is frightening to some, having your genetics been taken, at least when you're a kid, without your knowledge or without your approval. It's one thing. But did you say yes before incarnating on this planet? If you did, then they're allowed to come and you're helping them. It's just that you're not at this situation where you're accepting the help. But to the females, at least that I talk to, when they're being shown their own kids, sometimes they don't even know it's theirs. But as soon as they're shown this child, they've got this connection right away, and they know it's theirs, and they start crying. And even if the child looks different, if you know, a lot of the gray hybrids, they do tend to have like low hair count on their head. They do look different, but it's theirs, and they do love their child. And as soon as they're being taken away, Greg, they cry. They're in pain because they want to be with their children, and they know that the grays tell them that you can't. They won't survive on this planet because, you know, they're made differently. So there's an agenda. To say that it's bad, that it's good, it's really up to the individual, Greg. Because again, it's the fear factor. It's the fact that, and this is why I guess I'm out there talking about this, is what constitutes beauty, Greg? The fact everyone looks different on this planet. Somebody from elsewhere looks different. And it's the fact that they're doing this is maybe trying to bridge humanity to have somebody that's closer to us, that's closer to our genes, because, you know, again, they don't move like us, but if we're able to contact or speak with somebody that looks like us, a lot of hybrids that do live on Earth, they look like us, and they're they're clearly, they can walk in the crowd and you'll never notice. But if these hybrids could act as a bridge, maybe like there's going to be like more a peaceful contact that do happens down the road. I don't know when, but you know, they're, to me, I look at this as a positive thing.
You know, I don't know if anybody has called a, I'm sure somebody has done this, but, you know, I can't think of a better title for this episode than 50 Shades of Mr. Gray.
That's pretty good.
I think that's what we got to do now. It might get, we'll see. Yeah, I think, it's truly, I mean, it's fascinating that the gray agenda is as not as black and white as it could be. I mean, that's kind of what I take away from this. I never thought it would be that way, but it all lines up. Well, look, very interesting topic. And I am grateful that just because someone told you not to speak up once didn't mean that was the end of what you're doing. You've got great stuff out there that we're going to link everybody to at Experiencer Interviews for the YouTube channel. Experiencer Interviews is the title. You're putting out stuff very frequently, so everybody check that out. I look forward to going deeper into your content and learning more about this and getting rid of the fear, Mr. Gray, because you know, we could use less fear in the world in general, and especially about something that is as important as our place in the universe. I appreciate, Yan, that you're trying to get to the bottom of that. So thank you again for coming on.
Well, beautifully said, Greg, and it's been fun. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Mr. Gray, Yan, thanks so much for coming on the show. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music, Zero Boy for the pre-theme music. If you like this kind of weird content, make sure you rate the show and leave a review. I want to hear your words. I want to hear your crazy fringe self-expression, because you chose this show. And look, there's a lot going on in the world. You could be listening to Middle East coverage on NPR. You could be listening to that Michelle Williams audiobook, the tell-all of the latest pop star. But you came to this show, and you know there's no other show that's going to be covering Britney Spears' first hot, steamy marriage to Yasser Arafat. That's an Open Loops thing. Much love. Happy Halloween.